What's up, Radioheads? It's your girl, Ebony, letting you know that we've only got about 8 days left in our spring fundraising drive, and we really need your help to get to our campaign goal of $35,000. What does that money do? Well, it helps us do the work to make feminism more accessible to a global audience and, you know, help people get the tools to be a little bit more media literate. Can you help us get to our campaign goal? Any amount helps. $1, $5, $20. We would be so appreciative if you could pitch in. Head to feministfrequency.com/donate. Give what you can and just know that you are part of a movement and we appreciate you taking a stand with us. Thanks. And now on with the show.
I've noticed that when I leave town and I can't make it on the podcast, we revert what's your freak out to what's your deal.
It is an objectively better title, Anita.
Welcome to Feminist Frequency Radio. This is episode 27. I am still in Sweden, and I'm back in the captain's chair. Today, I am joined by the wind beneath my wings and the original Dala horse whisperer, Ebony Astor.
Everybody, if you knew how many times it took us just to get that greeting together, you would know what kind of show you're in for today.
Don't tell them that, Ebony. This is the show that asks you to be critical of the media you love, or alternatively, we're the feminist killjoys coming for your media, depending on your perspective. In today's show, we're going to be talking about some hot new additions to the Netflix lineup. First, we're going to talk about season 2 of Dear White People, a show that constantly made Ebony wonder if today's college students dress that well all the time. Then we'll laugh about Ali Wong's new stand-up special, Hard Knock Wife, and covet her amazing glasses and shiny shoes. As always, we'll both finish the show by sharing a little something in What's Your Freakout? Exclusively for our fantastic drip backers, this week's bonus is a special treat that Ebony has for me, and she'll reveal it when the moment is ripe. I am a little scared, but I'm also excited. What is Drip, you ask? Well, it's a subscription-based membership platform, and your generous support is what helps us keep making this podcast. If you want access to special perks and exclusive backer rewards, join our podcast community at d.rip/femfreak. Now on with the show. Hey, Ebony. As I was reading that intro, I realized I don't have a freakout this week. I'm so unprepared.
I was just thinking, oh my God, I had a freak out, and now I'm blanking on it. But it'll come back to me as the show comes on.
I always have too many. Yeah, I always have too many for 1 week and then nothing for another week. And I've just been running around like mad doing Swedish things, like eating meatballs and being stoic. So I haven't had time to have a freak out.
You trying to be stoic? I would like to see what that's like.
I know,
I'm so glad we're recording this, because this is absolutely the kind of banter that the people want from us.
I know. Gosh. Yeah. All right. So, Ebony.
Anita.
Would you like to step in the very large shoes of Carolyn and do a little pop culture news?
Oh, are we done with banter? I wanted to hear.
Would you like to banter more?
Yeah, I would like to hear more, just a little bit, like 30 seconds worth of what's happening with you in Sweden. Because I remember the last time you were there, you treated us to some weirdo story about the bathrooms, which people were very interested in.
Okay,
good. Hit it.
Yeah, I was like, oh God, I don't know if I have one, but I have one. So I went to a town called Karlshamn, which is like about 2 hours north of Malmö. And they were talking about how there used to be an ice cream boat. And I was like, what is an ice cream boat? They're like, it's a boat that you buy ice cream on. I was like, oh, that's why it's called an ice cream boat. But apparently it has sunk multiple times.
Oh, my God.
So the ice cream boat is no longer. But they believe that one of the last times that it was sunk, it was sabotaged by another local ice cream shop.
What kind of mafia-ass ice cream business is going on in small town Sweden?
I'm saying... small town Swedes are Swedes.
But you know
what?
But clearly, they know what's important in life, right? Like, it's not about drugs. It's not about prostitution or whatever. They are like, you know, we will have gangland war about the important things, and that's smooth, cold dairy delights.
So there's my Sweden story of this trip.
I know that we have some Swedish listeners. If y'all know anything more about this story, I would love to hear more about it. I would also love to hear more about. Apparently, there's a haunted metro station. In Stockholm, I think. Maybe Malmö. I'm not sure. I was just reading some urban legend about it. I would love to hear more about that shit, because I want to make Carolyn go and take pictures on whatever ghost train is there. So yeah. Anyways, cool. Yes, I am ready now to step into Carolyn's shoes for pop culture news. I'm going to try and keep it light and tight. Just kidding. Here's what's going on in the world, Anita. The world is shit. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. Recent proof of it, the most recent school shooting at Santa Fe High School in Texas. I don't want to minimize through joking or levity the absolute horror with which young people, you know, have to navigate this world, right? I can't imagine going to school every day with the oppressive anxiety of never knowing if you're going to make it home, you know? So our hearts go out to everyone. And I don't know what it's going to take for this country to act right. But because people are shit the way that they always are shit, this has become yet another referendum from our old friends, the incels, on men not getting laid enough. Y'all, we've talked about this shit before. It's the most bullshit argument ever. If you want to break it down with us in Twitter, I will be happy to break it down for you. But for right now, can we play whack-a-mole with these bullshit artists, please?
Moving. Well, the thing about this story, too, just really quick, was that the story buried the lead of the guy that did the shooting was going after either his ex-girlfriend or a woman who rejected him.
Yeah.
So it's all a part of the same.
Yeah, like a woman that he had not been in a relationship with, but that he had been relentlessly pursuing.
Despite
her like tremendous discomfort. And, you know, her mother has said, like, she was oppressed by this guy's attention. He would not leave her alone.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrifying. And like these are common threads that keep coming up over and over again. This isn't just a couple one-off things. This is systemic patriarchy and entitlement and all of the bullshit that's like manifesting in extreme violence. And it's horrifying. And we need to deal with like the root causes of these issues.
Yeah, because while we absolutely need to be talking about gun control, if we're not coupling that with the intersection of that with toxic masculinity, then we're not truly going to get anywhere. Argument that somehow if these dudes were getting laid on the regular by A-plus women, none of this would happen just shows you how disgusting the arguments that patriarchy advances are.
Yeah.
Moving on to other news. This is the most incredible segue I probably have ever done in my career. The royal wedding took place this weekend. The only reason I put this on Pop Culture Check-In is because my Twitter timeline this weekend was either people saying, like, I don't care about the royal wedding. I refuse to care about the royal wedding. You can't make me care about the royal wedding. And by their insistence upon not caring, proved how much they actually cared about the royal wedding happening. Or people who were just like, it might as well have been a Hallmark movie. They were fucking in love with the pageantry. You know that I don't give a shit about nothing but crime drama and Doctor Who. So did I watch the royal wedding? No. Am I interested in the hats?
But
yes. So I watched a lot of like photo recaps.
The hats, man.
I was like, how do I get
invited to a wedding where you have to wear a hat? Because I am so here for that.
Right?
One of the things that was cool is I didn't pay attention to it. I've been running around frantically around Sweden just
Humble
working and
brag.
Shit.
But yeah.
Yep. But like a lot of folks were really moved by how integrated sort of American Black culture was in this thing, in this like very, very historically oppressively white institution. So that was what was in my timeline and like the stuff.
Oh yeah,
that I
absolutely.
Saw
I mean, and there were very, you know, thoughtful, articulate responses from people on both sides, you know, of the care, don't care issue that were like, listen, I just can't get down with giving a shit about colonialist, you know, people having big parties.
Yeah, versus which is totally fair.
Yeah, versus people being like, yo, I am here for a Black woman showing up and showing out with all this
beautiful
Blackness.
Which is also totally fair.
Exactly, you know? So, like I said, I didn't have the mental space to deal with it, but that's because I have so little time to do anything besides watch my genre television that I just don't have time for other things that are happening in the world. That's pop culture news this week. I don't know why anyone would even read a newspaper or listen to the radio to know what's going on in the world other than what we're telling them. So that's what we got.
All right, let's move on to our first topic of this episode, Dear White People, Volume 2. So Dear White People was a movie by Justin Simien that got picked up by Netflix and turned into a TV show. The first season exists, and the second season just came out. Oh my God. Y'all, I'm really tired, okay? It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, so it's a show about black students in a very white dominated Ivy League school and the struggles with that. Did you watch the first season, Ebony?
I watched parts of the first season, parts of the second season. I have not seen the movie.
Okay.
So just know that anything I say is based upon that particular.
So I'm just going to have a conversation with myself because I'm the only one that watched it.
I thought we were talking about season two.
Yeah, we are. Did you watch all of season two?
No, I haven't watched all of it, but I have plenty to say, as I always do.
Perfect.
And if 90% of it is bullshit, that's just, you know, my normal ratio.
Cool. Well, and I'm actually kind of excited to work out some of my thoughts with everybody.
On
which
me?
Is the best way to do it. Because I'm a little conflicted about some things. So what did you think?
Let me call up my notes here, Anita.
Please
hold
call
on.
Up your notes.
Let me type in the voice of blackness notes. Yep, here we are. Okay. Dear white people, as you know, I am 127 years old. So watching season one and season two just put me in mind of older versions of the kind of, you know, black students experience in higher education. So, you know, I continue, and this is deliberately done, you know, like the show deliberately harkens back to things like School Days, Spike Lee's School Days, or A Different World, right? And, you know, I loved the way the show sets up different factions of black students at this PWI, predominantly white institution, because this actually does mirror the multiplicity of voices that exist within any community, right? I think so often, partially because, you know, representation is still like woefully inadequate for people of color or any marginalized group in the media. You have this tokenization, right? So if you only have one or two, you know, black people on a show, they have to represent all black people, which one person can never do. So I appreciated that, you know, like in the first season, Samantha White, who's, you know, kind of our main perspective character, who's the host of the radio show Dear White People, from which the larger show gets its name, she introduced Lionel, this on-campus reporter, to the different groups who meet at the Black Caucus. So it's the Black Student Union. It's the African American Students Union. There's, you know, CORE. There's the group that she says, like, is mainly just about, like, spoken word poetry and dope parties. Like, I really loved that, you know? I mean, it's not just the difference between, like, you know, bougie and hood black people.
Yeah.
But there's just, like, a complexity there that I really appreciated.
Yeah.
But I also appreciated that even though those groups had, like, you know, really deep, like, fundamental differences, the way that the black students came together at Winchester, which is, you know, obviously a stand-in for Harvard in the show, the way they came together for safety, for security, for comfort, despite those differences, also felt really true to life for me.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of shit that I was like, I don't buy in this show. And tonally, I do feel like, okay, I'm not sure who this show is for, but it does feel like it's a show for someone who's considerably younger than I am. But there were things that I thought, yeah, like this feels authentic to me, you know. And yes, I get that that's a hugely loaded and problematic term, but
sure. So the first season was you know, one of the characters, Reggie, gets a gun drawn on him by campus security, by a white cop, and it's this huge deal, obviously. And so the second season sort of picks up right at the end of that, where we're starting to see that Reggie is dealing with the trauma of such a intense experience. And I feel like the second season was a little bit less, was trying to take on a little bit more, whereas the first season felt a little more focused in terms of its narrative. But so here's my thing. And this is the part that I'm kind of like, it feels like it's trying to do the sort of Aaron Sorkin, like, walk and talk, like, banter, like, you know, quippy, whatever. And in some, like, sometimes I'm rolling my eyes because I'm like, oh, my God, this is so heavy handed. Like, it's just so incredibly over the top. And like, I found it kind of irritating. But then I kind of step back and I'm like, well, who is the show for? Like, is it value? Is this like, is it just people who are already down who are watching it, or people who are, who consider themselves allies that are like, yeah, I get this, or people who are witnessing Black experiences who've never gotten, or like who've never seen themselves reflected in these ways? Like, that's my problem with trying to grapple with like feeling like it's heavy handed. Like, is it okay that it's that way? But then there's other moments where I straight up am like, there were two moments where I was straight up crying. And this is my own personal shit, because watching Sam go through the trauma of online harassment and like watching her break down about it, I was like, oh, God, this is so close to home. Like, this hits all of my personal buttons. And so like there were these moments in it that I thought illuminated our experiences in ways I am not Black. Fun fact for everybody.
What?
I didn't mean to say that, but like illuminated.
You mean despite the work that I have done trying to teach you about cookouts, potato salad, bid whist, what's happening? You have not achieved any level of Blackness.
Weird.
Yet.
It's weird how
I'm
that
so
happens.
Surprised.
It's weird how that hasn't happened,
right?
Me. Yeah. But I just mean that there's like a sort of. I don't want to say millennial, but like a contemporary experience, right, of what it's like to interact with the internet and social groups and organizing and activism, and then couple all of that with like what you were talking about with all of these different experiences of like types of Blackness within this space as well. Like, I think there's a lot of value, and I do recommend the show, even though there are times that I'm like, oh, okay, like, can we just a little, can the characters be more human and less like
archetypes.
I
absolutely, there's a way in which this show is absolutely for the white people to whom it is addressed, right?
Yeah.
So while at the same time I think being primarily for the Black people who are the interlocutors, who are you know, addressing the white people of the title. So there are things, you know, as I say, that just felt very real to me about the way that, you know, Black folks talk when they are together, that I think, oh, this is not something that white people are going to get, or people who are not in the culture are going to get, right? So for instance, when Sam is talking to Joe, her friend, and I really want to talk about Joe, because I want to talk about what does it mean to have a show with a Black female lead who has a Black best friend that nevertheless fits like the Black best friend trope. Like, that was blowing my mind. Like, that was my main like thing I wanted to chop it up about. But, you know, so Sam is talking to Joe about her, you know, dipping with Gabe, her white TA for her documentary class. And she says, you know, remember, like, I'm biracial. And Joelle's like, yeah, but you're not like Rashida Jones biracial. You're like Tracee Ellis Ross biracial. And I was like, yeah. Yo, like, I absolutely loved that, because I was like, I don't know that white people would know to frame things in that same way. But that absolutely, like, we unpack race and the way we perceive race in different ways based upon how people navigate the world and how they're allowed to navigate the world. And yeah, you know, Tracee Ellis Ross, Rashida Jones, both, you know, light skin to different degrees, biracial women. But yeah, we absolutely probably see one of them as white, you know, or having, you know, kind of white access in a way that we don't see for the other. So I thought that was really cool. But yeah, I did have to like kind of put my like old lady, you know, old scholar, been there, done that hat. You know, I had to take that off when watching the show, because I was like, yeah, I've had these conversations before, and I've had the opportunity and the luxury and the privilege of having them maybe at a more advanced level, but everybody is not me, you know?
Yeah.
So there are people who are 20 years old who are navigating this situation in their schools right now, who don't have the language and the tools to address them. They don't know how to articulate them yet, even though they're having these feelings. And so I feel like this show is for them.
Yeah. And I feel like I constantly have to remind myself that, like, I was a, like, angry, outspoken, annoying young activist. You know, like
what?
What? Can you believe it? Like where,
I can't.
Where you get older and you sort of settle into it a little bit, like you pick and choose your battles more as opposed to just taking all of the battles. And I think that what you're saying is very accurate here in terms of like this could be really incredibly valuable for folks who are in it in the moment. Wait, do you want to talk about Joe? Because I want to switch to talking about Gabe real quick.
I will happily talk about Joe or Gabe, especially because I really loved one and really was irritated as fuck by the other. And I bet you will not be surprised about where my allegiances lie.
Well, so the episode, did you watch episode 8? I think it's 8.
No. Episode 8 of season 2?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so I'm a little bummed you didn't watch it because I think I would love to riff on this with you. It is an episode where the majority of the episode is Gabe and Sam, and Sam agrees to.
Well, now I'm glad I didn't see it because Gabe and Sam as a couple bored the F-U-C-K out of me.
Spoiler alert.
Soylent Green is people.
Sam agrees to do this interview with Gabe because Gabe is doing this Am I a Racist documentary bullshit. And in it, they're like hashing out both their relationship and both what it means to be an ally. And, you know, it's I've heard from several white dudes when I posted about this episode that like it was really important to them because they started to realize like when Sam's calling Gabe out like on his white savior bullshit that like a lot of dudes recognize that in themselves. And like it's a really interesting episode and the conversation is super rich. And like there's this moment I got really emotional because Sam's like, fuck you. Like, you don't know what it means to be a target. Like, you don't understand that, like, the internet hurts. And it, like, but she won't admit it until he pushes her. And that pisses me off, too, because he's like, he says, how does it feel to be a target? And she's like, you know, she goes into her talking points. And then he's like, you're not answering my question. And I'm like, I swear to God, I have been in this loop. Like, I've been in this exact loop where I'm like, stop fucking making me be vulnerable on camera as a freak show for everybody to watch. Right. So that I thought was really powerful. And then Gabe called the cops on the party in the first season. And there's some shit in the first season that really pisses me off. And so at some point, he says to Sam, this isn't Selma. And then she says back to him, you're the system, Gabe. And that's like he starts to finally get it. But like peeling away all of these pieces in that conversation, she also talks about epigenetics, which I'm really interested in. Which is the way that trauma gets passed down, like a generational trauma gets passed down through through generations. So slavery, genocide, you know, other forms of trauma. And I was like, damn, they're really like fucking getting into this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was actually a really good moment. It pissed me off because eventually they get back together. And so he gets like, so even though he's like, oh my God, I get it, which, you know, whatever, they're trying to wrap it up with a bow. Like he kind of gets a pass because all of a sudden they're like, I miss you. I love you. We're fucking again. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. Like, I get that there's this personal storyline and cool and whatever, but it felt really annoying. And I hate him. So whatever.
Yeah, that dude, like, God bless him. He was like mayonnaise on a saltine. Like, my gaze just rolled right off. I found that whole thing so boring. From the very beginning of season one, well, the first episode, because you learn very quickly who Sam is fucking. But from, like, the first scene when Sam is a bit cagey about who she likes and, you know, where she's going to go, the show is trying to point you in the direction of it being this dude, Reggie. But I knew from minute one she was going to be fucking a white dude. I think there is a very interesting conversation happening with people within the community about how we choose who to love and what that means or what it doesn't mean. And there is a small but significant number of people who do have problems with, you know, black women, black men, you know, who date or who partner up with folks outside the race, but who are nevertheless perceived as being like, you know, the voices of the people, right? So, or like primary activists within an area. And so I wanted a bit more. I thought it was a bit heavy-handed in the way that it was treated. The idea that, like, anybody dating, you know, outside their race, a white person, whatever, is going to be, like, shamed in the way that Sam was in that common room. I was like, yo, y'all, no one gives a fuck who you're shitting, you know, who you're sleeping with to that level.
Yeah.
But I do think the show, in a lot of ways, they want Gabe's good intentions to mean more than it actually did to me.
But I feel like they deal with that in this episode I just talked about. Where, like, at first you think that Sam is being a reactionary and we're kind of looking at it being like, but he's trying and you're being extreme. But I think that, like, they resolve that by being like, no, he's actually in the wrong here. And she's not being extreme. I think that's how I interpreted it.
Awesome. I might go back and watch.
No, you won't.
I'm gonna keep it 100 with you. I miss school days. I miss a different world. And so the sheer joy I took in watching these beautiful young black people just walk.
Aren't they
through
the hottest people ever? And their clothing?
Girl, I was crying laughing because I was like, has college changed this much since 1890 when I was walking the quad? Because these people are turned up and turned out at all hours of the day. 7 days a week. And I was like, really? There's a scene where Sam is wearing heels to class. And I was like, I don't know that I wore heels one time in college unless I had like a presentation or some shit. But this was just like her regular.
Yeah. And like Reggie dresses himself like that. Come on, man. He was fucking.
I know.
Yeah. I was impressed.
But I was like, but then I was like, well, you know, I went to state school. I didn't go to an Ivy League. Maybe y'all do it. That was different at the Ivy Leagues. But it was very interesting. I also love how there is an element of wondering whether these students there is an element of reality to that because they are at an elite PWI. You know, they are not in spaces where they are made to feel comfortable. And so, yeah, it's not respectability politics to say, like, you know, we have to for our own internal comfort, you know, we have to wear a mask that includes constantly or put on armor, rather, you know, that includes constantly looking our best.
All right. I have two more thoughts before we wrap this up. First of all, so spoilers, the Ivy, you know who the alt Ivy whatever Twitter handle is? Did you ever get that?
No,
far?
Who's it?
It's Silvio. It's Silvio.
Oh.
And they just brush over it. Like, it happens and then the next thing starts and the next episode starts. And I was like, so that's a very specific choice, right? It's a choice of, like, is it good to not put more attention onto that and not focus on that person? But part of me was like, no, we got to dig into this shit. This guy who is fucking infiltrating and also is not white, they give him one line and then that's kind of it. And that really pissed me off. I felt like there was so much more to dig in there. My last thought is, do people still smoke out of bongs?
Why are you asking me? I'm 400 years old. I don't know.
I just feel like, I don't know. Like, we've got so much new weed technology that do people still smoke out of bongs? And there's that one scene where Troy comes in and he's like, he's just always smoking out of a bong. I'm just like, all right. These are the important questions. But I also don't want to gloss over the fact that, like, I really liked the, like, Lionel learning about his queerness and experimenting and, like, trying to find that. Like, there's a lot of richness in that storyline, especially for, like, a young black man to come out and try to figure out what his sexual identity is. There's too much to talk about. Shit.
There is. You know what? And I really do want to touch on Joelle as a character, because I absolutely did love her. So who knows? Maybe I'll write something for the site. Maybe I'll just.
You want to do something? Do you want to talk about it real quick? Or
no, because I have at least 37 smooth minutes of material.
I know, but
Joelle.
She was so great.
So I will wrap it up by saying I do love The small touch that, you know, when there's the like, you know, conservative students radio show that Sam walks in on in season two.
Yeah, the Dear Right People.
Yeah, Dear Right People. So it's a white dude, a white woman, and then an Asian man on who are hosting that show. I loved the touch that as they sign off, after having just, you know, shared the most racist, horrible views, they sign off using black slang, right? So they're like, all right, you know, keep it real, fam. You know, we'll see what. And I was just like, yes, this is absolutely the way that, you know, black culture gets commodified.
Yeah.
And so you have people who are horrifically hateful, who nevertheless traffic in, you know, the aesthetics and the shape of black culture and shaping their own personalities and, you know, their own presentation. I thought that was, you know, just a small thing, but really well done.
All right, let's move on to Ali Wong's new stand-up special on Netflix called Hard Knock Wife. This is her second Netflix special. I did not see her first one. This is actually the first thing I've seen of her at all.
Yeah.
And it was like 90% delightfully wonderful.
I absolutely agree with you. I don't know what to do. That's pretty much my review, too. Like,
yeah.
90% wonderful, and then 10%, are you serious with these Mexican jokes?
Yeah! So I have two things. I have, okay, well, okay, hold on. Let's back up. So she just, so in her first special, she's pregnant. And so that's the whole thing, is you've got this, like, you know, sort of, how do you, what's the word for like how like she's like sexual and dirty and whatever, and so it's kind of funny that you have like she's playing on the stereotype of being an Asian woman and being pregnant and all of this stuff. So in her second special, she's pregnant again, and she's talking about having a baby. And so what I loved about it is that she is talking about how much parenthood sucks and like all of the shit that happens to women's bodies and the expectation of women. And there's a lot of in these stories that she's telling and in the jokes she's telling, she's very, very much like there are double standards between the way male parenting and female parenting is viewed. And she's talking extensively about how we need fucking maternity leave for parents. And like, so I love that she's able to weave that in. Like, that's my favorite kind of comedy, right? Is that the comedy that is like, can be super fun and engaging and also has this like political undertone or overtone to it.
It was very funny. And so Ali Wong is, I'm not sure if she still is, but I know that she was a writer on Fresh Off the Boat for a while, that sitcom about the Asian family. I think it's Jeff Yang's, based upon his book. So this special, I haven't seen Baby Cobra, but this one, Hard Knock Wife, very, very funny. And from the very beginning, you know she's going to come out swinging and come out hard, because she comes out to like that Wu-Tang song, right? And I do want to unpack the ways that like people of color, depending upon their ethnicity, can feel comfortable. This goes back to Dear White People, right? Like the idea that people will use black signifiers to suggest something about themselves when they don't actually, you know, exhibit or inhabit any blackness themselves. So I have to admit, from the first second when I realized that it was a Wu-Tang song that she came out to, and, you know, like when it's not a black person, you know, like bumping a song when, you know, you hear like the rapper saying stuff about like nigga this, nigga that, right? I'm like, okay, are you rapping along to that song? You know, because if so, I'm side eyeing you. So I was like, okay, what do we got here?
Totally.
But you know, she's going to come out hard. And that is particularly powerful because, yeah, she is playing with the stereotype of the like demure, submissive, quiet Asian woman. You know, this horribly gross, reductive stereotype that still exists in our culture. And she's like, I refuse to participate in that. That's not who I am. I'm going to be speaking up. You're going to pay attention to me. You know, all eyes on me. You're going to deal with whether you like this or not. And I'm not going to give you any ability to look away.
Yeah.
Yep. You know?
Yep.
So I absolutely, and yeah, like she doesn't pull any punches. She, there's no like dressing things up so that they stay better or they're more palatable for the mid in the audience, for the white people in the audience. Like she is ineffably.
Yo, this pregnant woman flashed the audience so many times. I was
so
here
many
for that.
Times.
I was here
Me
for
too.
It. I was like,
and
yes.
I loved it. Like, I'm not sure, but it looked like her underwear were like zebra print.
Yeah, it was
so
like striped
with
they
the animal
striped.
Print.
Yeah,
yeah, of her dress. I was like, go on, girl, go on. I was so here for it. Like, you will deal.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know, you will deal. I absolutely love that. And yeah, she weaves all of that throughout. So
yeah,
and she doesn't hold back on any element of which clearly like straight. Female sexuality and motherhood, right? So she's talking about her husband, sex with her husband, or sex when she was younger. Excuse me. About the sheer joy of being with a partner who's like, no, your period is not gross. Let's get busy.
Yeah.
You know, like,
or
she,
I
you
love
know,
when...
I was like, girl, go ahead. Like,
I love when
so
she was talking about,
shit.
Like, I trained you. Like to give head properly. Why would I give that up? I'm not going to put in the time again for
exactly.
another one. And she
that spoke to my spirit.
Yeah, and then there was the line about like she's like, when you're eating pussy, don't use my thigh as a tripod.
Right. Oh my god. No, seriously, y'all, you should check out this special because it actually is hilarious. I loved when she talked about like flipping the whole slut shaming thing on its head when she says, if women sleep with dudes on the first date, it's not because we don't respect ourselves, it's because we don't respect you.
Yeah. It was real good. Okay, but that brings me to that brings me to the two parts that I had actual real like strong issues with, which was so unfortunate because the rest of it I thought was great. So you had mentioned
I bet we have the same ones. Yep,
yeah,
I bet
I'm
we have
sure.
the same ones.
So there's the Mexican, like, you know, like you don't get to use the stereotypes of a different culture. Like it's not like it was overtly racist in the ways that you would suspect, you know, in the ways that we see comedians sort of.
No, it is. Like, it straight
but
up
it was,
is. Like, oh,
but it
Mexicans
was very,
be having babies. Like, it was just straight up racist.
Totally. And just, like, that like, you know, Mexican babies are cared for by other babies. Or, like, they know how to party. And, like, just, and, like, the Disneyland comp. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that I just kept being like, you don't get to make these jokes. Like, this
right.
isn't. This ain't yours.
Right. Like, and so often, you know, as I was trying to say before, so often people from one, you know, outsider culture, marginalized culture, feel as if they can deploy certain, like, racist tropes against other cultures because they have, like, a pass, in essence, you know? So,
yeah,
like,
that's
hey, I know
it
what
works.
It's like to be... Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's not how it works. So, because you're Asian and you deal with the peculiar, you know, the treatment that is specific to Asian identity in this culture doesn't mean that you get to be racist against Mexicans or Black folks either. And so, the other thing, and I wonder if this is one of your problems as well, was when she was talking about dudes with small dicks.
Yes.
Okay, first of all,
oh,
can we
so
please
mad.
Can we please retire that shit? Like,
can,
there is something so deeply fucked up about the like insistence people have about equating real masculinity with the size of a dude's cock, right? Oh my
it
god.
It made me so
Do we have children? Do we have children who listen to this show? I hope not.
I don't
we should
know.
Put it Producer Phil, you need to put a header on this episode. Like, this one is at least 14 plus.
I don't think it's worse than our
plus.
Normal ones. But
I know, but I want to give people a heads up. But yeah, but specifically, you cannot engage in those jokes and then have the punchline be about, and it was a Black dude. Girl,
right?
If you don't sit the fuck down. Like, I was so with
it's
her.
It's also not
you know?
Your,
except for those
you
two
don't
things.
Get to make that joke. Like, you
yeah.
don't, it's not your joke. It's not your community to talk about in that way. Like, I, the small dick jokes really piss me off. And part of it is the, like, exactly, whatever, I'm not going to repeat what you just said. But the other part of it is that, like, let's stop making fun of people's bodies. Like, let's just hard stop. Don't make fun of the way people look in terms of things that are just the way you are, right? Like, whether it's size or, well, it's all size, like fatness or, you know, skin things or whatever it is. Just stop fucking making fun of the way people look. And clearly, she has a ton of material that she can pull from that isn't sexist, that isn't racist, that's fucking hilarious. Just do that, right?
As a culture, we don't spend as much time talking about the ways that like social norms about body type can be hurtful to men, and that it just reinforces, you know, really regressive patriarchal notions. And the idea that men, the category of man, must look a certain way is unhealthy in 90%, 99% of its forms. And the whole idea of like big dick dude, and specifically big dick black dudes, mm-hmm. you know, like it's just it. No one, as far as I'm concerned, no one gets to make those jokes. They're horrible jokes. They only hurt people, you know. Yeah. It's not a positive stereotype, even if you're a black person making that joke. Like, no, let's just retire them.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Save it.
Totally. Otherwise, I thought it was very funny.
I thought it was very funny
there.
Too,
so
and I'm probably
I recommend
check
it,
out
but
her,
like just be very aware
her
of those
first
two bits.
You know, Baby Carver, like I'm into it, and this is, I think, a prime example of how you can be critical of the media you love. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I think Ali Wong took like a hard left on some places. She should have, you know, like she should have stayed in her lane in some areas. But I'm gonna let her cook, and I'm like, Ali Wong gives a shit what I think about her stand-up. But anyways, I'm gonna let her cook. I'm gonna watch Baby Cobra. I'm gonna check it out, and then who knows? Maybe one day when we need to do a raggedy ass bonus on my own, I will fill you in. The people are desperate for my hot takes on 2-year-old media, so I will give it to you then. What's your
freak out?
What's your
freak out?
All right. So I've noticed that when I leave town and I can't make it on the podcast, we revert what's your freak out to what's your deal. So I know, I hear you, I see this. I see this happening mm-hmm. without me.
It is an objectively better title, Anita.
Are we going to have to just switch to what's your deal? Are we just going to have to go back and forth like every other
week
or something?
No, because the Anita army is loud and proud, and they're going to be busting up my inbox, you know, talking about how much they love what's your freak out.
I feel like it's an even split.
Blah, blah, blah. I get it. I hear it. So just let me have it occasionally when you dip out of town. That's all I ask.
So, Ebony, neither of us have a freak out deal.
I do have a freaky outie-ish
all right
deal.
I would like to hear your freaky outie-ish deal.
Okay. Can I also say that by the time we've gotten to this point in the show, you will probably have heard, you, our dear listeners, will probably have heard some banging in the background. I am not being kidnapped. My house is not being robbed. The builders are working on the roof of my apartment, and they have been at it for literal hours. So I apologize. I can't even say in advance for the sound of this show because we're 50 smooth minutes into it. But I just want to apologize now for it. Anyways, my freak out for the week. One, can I use the freak out? Anita, I need a ruling on this. Can I use the freak out section to apologize for something?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Okay, so my freak out last week was about, I think it was last week, was about season 4 of The Bridge, which, as you know, is one of my absolute favorite shows. And in fact, the show that inaugurated my love of Scandi noir, Scandinavian crime fiction, televised Scandinavian crime fiction. And so season 4 was just recently released here in the U.S. I, of course, immediately just binged watched, you know, all 8-10 episodes of it the way I always do when a new season comes out. This is the final season. And so, you know, I talked a little bit last week about how much I love the show, what I love about the show. And one of the things that I mentioned was the main character, Sega Nguyen, who is part of the Malmö Police Department. And I'm hating the way I broke it down, because one of the things that I said was I really loved that we had this very, to my mind, very nuanced, thoughtful, sophisticated portrayal of someone who is explicitly on the autism spectrum. And I said, I know she's not played by an actor who is herself on the autism spectrum, but I really loved her portrayal, and I just thought there was a real depth to it. And then immediately after the show, I was just like, no, like, we need to stop doing that. You know, we as a culture being like, oh, yeah, someone else can stand in for this person in a community of which they are not a part. I love the actor who plays Sega. I love her portrayal. But nevertheless, we got to get past this point where it's OK for someone who's not in those communities to be playing those roles, you know?
Yeah.
And I just felt like, damn, I'm participating at the same time that I'll be, you know, tweeting nonstop about how, you know, we need like own voices and own representation. When it comes down to like my own viewing choices, I'm handing out passes left and right. We got to hold ourselves more to account. So this is me, you know, saying mea culpa. I can't be a giant hypocrite and be like, oh, yeah, it's important for, you know, a disabled character to be played by a disabled actor in one sense, but then have an autistic character not played by an autistic actor on the other hand, just because it's convenient for me and my viewing habits. So my freak out is, when am I going to get better as a person? Why am I like this? Will I ever change for the better?
It was a forever ongoing thing that
I needed to be. I needed to be over, Anita.
You needed to be over.
So many
cool.
Other things
cool.
that I'm fucked up about. You
yeah.
know?
Why don't you go hang out with Gabe from Dear White People?
Oh my god! like chicken noodle soup without the noodles in the chicken. I just could not care less about that dude.
I know. All right, so I have You got to pick one. I'll do one of two freakouts.
Okay.
Do you want me to talk about a book that I enjoyed, or do you want me to talk about my new tattoo?
I want to hear about the new tattoo, and other people can just go jump. Tell me about your new body art. Body rock me, Anita.
So I raced over here because I had just got a tattoo while I'm here in Copenhagen, and it is a piece of a quote that means a lot to me. So the tattoo just says "made of stories," and oh shit, the plastic's coming off. And wow. Off the rails already. So the entire quote is, "The universe is made of stories, not atoms." And if you've been following me for a while, you'll know that I use that quote a lot. It's by Muriel Rykeiser. And I think it is so critically important to how I view the world and how I view activism and how I view literally everything that I do. Because we as humans are learning and teaching through story constantly. Our memories are different. Like, our memories are constantly reforming as different stories that we tell ourselves. We are constantly sharing stories with other people as ways to connect. And I feel like as activists, stories are more powerful than just like a list of facts. And also, as someone who believes that the media can change the world, we change the world through storytelling. And so this is something I've been thinking about getting for a long time, just as a, you know, as a reminder to myself that this is what is important to me in the way that I engage with the world, and as a reminder of like the power of storytelling in the vastness of what that all means. So it was nice. And I haven't gotten a tattoo. This is my first one in 13 years. I haven't gotten a tattoo in 13 years. So
wow.
I forgot how addictive they are. Like, I immediately was like, wait, you're done yet? No, you can't be done. I want another one.
No, this is exactly. Like, at some point, I will just be the illustrated woman because I love tattoos so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, this is great radio talking about this very visual thing that Anita just got.
I'll post pictures of it when it
heals. Her body. But it looks amazing. I'm so proud that you got it done after having, you know, thought about it and talked about it for so long. But I have to say, I am most excited about the fact that you agreed to the phenomenal benefit once we reach our $35,000 campaign goal, that you'll have every donor's name tattooed on your body. I couldn't believe it. When you finally said yes, I was like, this is a woman who commits to the movement, you know? And so if people want to go ahead and just start sending in your names in this kind of font that you want, we'll start getting that started.
All right. Now we need to cut Ebony's mic. Too bad. Too bad we're not too in a studio bad. To do that with.
Oh my God. You know what you need is a giant hook, like those hooks from old variety shows, to pull me off stage.
That's exactly what we need. Yeah. All right, y'all. Any last words, Ebony, before I outro us?
Yeah, incels are whack. Don't pay attention to them fuckers. You know, whack-a-mole that shit. Whack-a-mole.
All right, y'all. That is our show. You can catch us back here every single Wednesday. I don't know why I'm talking like this all of a sudden.
Because you have low blood sugar.
Yeah, man. When Carolyn's gone, it's just a disaster up in here. We need her back. I'm going to see her tomorrow. She's coming to Sweden.
I hate y'all so much.
I wish she could be here with us.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. So that I could stop buying you goddamn dollar horses every time I come here and lugging them back in my suitcase.
Them things are like 0.3 ounces, but don't think I'm not grateful. I love those things so much.
Remember that you too can join our podcast community and help us bring you this spicy cardamom bun of content every single week at d.rip/femfreak. If you are enjoying the show, please leave us a review on iTunes because it really helps us spread the word about it. And, you know, tell all of your friends while you're sitting around in your Ivy League dorm rooms and you're like, hey, there's this great new podcast that you should listen to. You can check out all of our work and our other podcasts at feministfrequency.com. So be sure to follow us on Twitter at FemFreak to stay up to date on all the news. And we want to hear about you. I don't know if we want to hear about you, but we do want to hear from you. So hit us up on Twitter at FemFreak and let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about on FemFreak Radio. You can find me at Anita Sarkeesian. And Ebony, where are you at this week?
I am at Whack-A-Mole. And can I just say, regarding people hitting us up and talking to us and stuff that we can share, just a reminder that we hit our $20,000 campaign goal.
Yeah!
We are so excited. And that means that the benefit attached to that level is now in effect. So please, if you listen to this show, record your very own freak out for us. Kind of, you know, keep it brief. Don't send us a 10-minute freak out. Keep it to like 15, 30 seconds. But send those to us and we're going to be playing them on the air, live and loose, and we cannot wait to hear what y'all are freaking out about.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. That's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Our producer is Phil Circus, who is very annoyed at how off the rails this episode is. But he
Phil loves us.
He also composed our theme music, which is wonderful, isn't it? You should let Phil know that you love his theme music. We will see you all next week. Bye.
Bye.